Welcome to the Kaiser Human Performance Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to educate and inspire you to make the most of your journey in health and performance. Each episode will provide an in-depth discussion on a specific topic related to human performance. If you're a growth-minded individual seeking knowledge and better solutions, this podcast is for you. We're glad you're listening in, and we're excited to learn alongside you. My name is Gabe Durman, and joining me today is Olympic silver medalist and two-time NCAA champion, Andretti Bain. Andretti's journey began in the Bahamas. From an early age, he knew his calling was to run. Motivated to make his dreams of becoming a champion a reality, he made his way to the United States for college. His path wasn't an easy one, but with grit and faith, Andretti placed first in both the indoor and outdoor NCAA men's 400 meter in 2008. That summer, he represented the Bahamas in Beijing, taking home the silver in the men's 400 relay. On today's episode, we cover Andretti's unique story, from his triumphs on the world stage to his current role as coach and mentor at Oral Roberts and Champion Spirit Country Club. He shares with us how he continues to inspire others to dream big, work hard, and have faith. Be sure to check out our episode notes to find out where you can follow and stay up to date on Andretti's journey. Enjoy the episode. Andretti Bain, the Bohemian Dream. How are you, my friend?
Gabe, I am wonderful, man. So good to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. I know it's been a few weeks since we met in Nassau, which was incredible. We had the chance to talk about training, to talk Kaiser, then also spend some time with the new equipment there at Champion Spirit Country Club. But I think we both walked away from that visit with a really strong connection. So I'm glad that we get to do this today, and thank you for being with me.
Definitely. I feel the same way, man. It was a pleasure meeting you, and I look forward to us collaborating on many more ventures together.
I can't wait for that as well. Tell me and our listeners about life for the great Andretti Bain growing up in the Bahamas.
Well, I appreciate the compliment on the greatness. but I consider myself a plain old young kid from the Bahamas who's always believed in following his dreams. I started from the age of 5. I think I identified what it was that I wanted to do, what I felt like my purpose was in life, and that was run. Basically, at 5, that's what I felt like my purpose was growing up in the Bahamas. I played multiple sports, was never really good at hardly any of them, but track and field was the one that I just gravitated to the most. I was encouraged or inspired by the success of my uncle who ran track and field. And so I saw his medals, his ribbons, his trophies. And that inspired me. I wanted to achieve those same things. And so just growing up, career days in school, I would have my friends saying that they wanted to be doctors, lawyers. My dad is a pharmacist. And for me, my only answer was I wanted to run. So much so that I got teased oftentimes in school because my friends would be the ones saying Andretti wants to run around a circle for the rest of his life. And it was through me following my passion of track and field that I felt like I discovered the purpose that's for my life. And so growing up in the Bahamas was great. Tropical climate, beach all the time, tropical fruits. You're eating from the trees. You're eating from just off the side of the street in terms of the fruit trees. It was great. It was a real nice, happy place.
So two questions. One, were you always the fastest kid at a young age? And number two, what was it about running? I mean, I know you said your uncle was a big influence on you, but what was it? What were those feelings? Why did you just only want to run?
No, I was not always the fastest kid. As a matter of fact, that's something that I've continually worked on my entire life, basically. I remembered when I started, I was one of the youngest kids. And so what we would consider giving someone a head start, you put someone 5, 10, 15 meters ahead of you, and you would have to try and catch them. Well, I was always that kid who had that head start. And I remember a neighbor of mine growing up back in the Bahamas. He always said, Andretti, you're getting better, so I'm going to reduce your head start. And he started to reduce it slowly but surely, slowly but surely. And I remember it was, you know, months when I finally was able to line off next to all of my neighbors and I was finally able to beat them. And same going into school, I wasn't always the best, but I was always one who kept working because I wanted to be the best. What about running that made me feel as if that was my purpose, that was my calling? I don't know, I just felt free. I just felt as if that was something that brought me enjoyment. I felt like it was something that got people to accept me and see me for who I am and what I enjoy. And so I just always gravitated to it. I like I said, I played other sports, but none really felt the same as when I was on the track or when I was lying off racing someone. I think there's just that adrenaline rush of knowing, okay, I'm lying off against someone or I'm lying up against someone and made a best man win. And so, you know, that's probably the best way that I could explain that and the expression or the feeling that I got from track and field.
Incredible. So tell us about this dream and the evolution of this dream, because as you grow up, as you continue to race against people and win and you start to realize like, I'm pretty good at this. When did that dream start to turn into a very real reality as you grew older?
Great question, Gabe. I think for me, that dream became a reality. So at 14, I started traveling globally as part of the Bahamas National Team. And so, you know, I would go everywhere throughout the Caribbean, throughout Europe. I would go throughout the U.S., South America, Latin America, wherever it was. And I started to see not only that I was the best in the Bahamas or one of the best in the Bahamas, but that I was also, you know, classed as one of the best throughout the world. And coming down to the end of high school, and it's time now to make a decision for college. And I started to see more and more that one track would be an opportunity for me to be able to go off to a university and get a free education via a scholarship. And so at that point, that's when I really started to zone in and started to see the future that track and field could provide me, or the opportunities that track and field can provide me.
So tell me about that recruiting process. And, you know, as an average fan, I look at track and field and I usually think of these big universities. There are some big name brands that you would think of when you think about track and field. And when we started talking, you know, you informed me, hey, I went to Oral Roberts, and I was surprised to hear that somebody that had so much success, and nothing against Oral Roberts, it's just not necessarily one of the schools that you really hear of when you think of these big track and field programs. And for someone like yourself who had been traveling from age 14 around the world to compete, and clearly you know that you're one of the best, tell me about this recruiting process and really how you ended up at Oral Roberts.
So funny enough you would say that, because I also thought that I would be a candidate for a big name school. I remember I wanted to go to University of South Carolina just from the richness of their track and field history. And, you know, I figured I'd be at one of the major schools. Because like I said, I came out, I graduated high school as the top 400 meter runner and top 100 meter hurdler in the Bahamas. And third throughout the Caribbean. As a matter of fact, one of my career highlights is at the Caribbean Junior Championships, where I had beaten Usain Bolt in the 400 meters in the heats at Carifta. That's our Caribbean Junior Championships. And so I felt like persons or schools should have been able to recognize my talent, recognize my grit, my determination. And I honestly thought that I would have been a top recruit to any school. And it narrowed it down where Nebraska, the University of Nebraska, they were interested, but weren't prepared to give me a full scholarship. And then University of South Carolina, they were interested, but they had some other guys that they were more or less focused on. And these were some guys who had beaten me earlier. And I guess for them, they were the top recruits. And so it just worked out that at the time, he was the high school physical education coach, Brunel McKinsey. And he was my high school physical education coach. And he attended Oral Roberts University. So he did all the recruiting for ORU. As a matter of fact, I remember just one day in school, he came and he presented me with a scholarship paper and says, hey, sign this, ORU is interested. And at that time, that was my first time ever hearing about Oral Roberts University. Until I started to do a little bit more research, and then I realized, okay, well, I think the most famous Bahamian who would have attended Oral Roberts was Dr. Miles Monroe, the late Dr. Miles Monroe. And so the more research I did, the more I realized this seems like a school for persons who are wanting to get into the ministry, not someone who wanted to be a professional athlete. And so I kind of placed it on the back burner. I was still really focused on some of the other schools, some of the major schools. And then they presented two of my friends a scholarship opportunity as well. So that started to increase my interest because now I'm saying, okay, if those other schools don't provide me a full scholarship, which was the only way that I would have been able to go off to a university, because I felt like I was deserving of a full scholarship. I said, I'll go to ORU with my friends. And I remembered, I kept holding out for the last minute. University of South Carolina never came through, kept holding off. And so when I signed for ORU, I was like, okay, well, this is it. And I went there. And as soon as I signed with ORU, I felt like there's no way I made the right choice. Like I finally got on campus and I loved the school. I loved the university. And I did not see track and field as a focus. Had a really good coaching staff. The former coach, Joe Dahl, was my head coach. Coach Alec Musokomo was our assistant distance coach. He's the head coach now here at ORU. And, you know, I just didn't see it. I saw where the coaches, they were a world-class experience because Coach Dahl, he was the world record holder in pole vault. Coach Alec made the Zambian Olympic team for the 800 meters. However, they weren't getting the top athletes, the top recruits. And so, you know, a coach is only as good as the athletes that he coaches, right? And so when I came, I said, listen, I love the school. I love the atmosphere. I love the environment. But for what I want to achieve in track and field, I don't think that this is the place.
Okay, Andretti, so this wasn't the place for you, yet here you are. So tell us, what made you want to stay?
You know, Coach Dahl, he told me, he said, son, if you believe in it, you can be an NCAA champion. I'm telling you, you have a lot more work to do. And he said, I challenge you, rather than going someplace else and trying to make it happen there, take on the challenge here. And that's something that I still struggled with. I remember going back to my parents during the first break, and I said, I don't want to go back. That's not the school for me. I believe that I can become an NCAA champion. I believe that I can become an Olympic champion. That's not the school for me. And my parents were divided on that decision. And ultimately, my dad ensured that I returned to ORU. Let me put it like that, right? He ensured that guided independence, right? He said, listen, you could go anywhere else. He said, however, he has to play a ticket for you to return to Tulsa. He has all the financial aid that you need outside of track and field for you to return to Tulsa to ORU. Now, if you decide to go someplace else, then I guess you'll figure that out on your own.
he said, you're going back to ORU, but I'll let you decide. What time do you want to leave for the airport?
Correct. Yeah, correct. And so I made the decision. I came back. And at that point, I made up in my mind. I said, I will not become a product of my environment. I will ensure that my environment produces the product that I believe that I can become. And so I just started game. I went to work. I started working. I started training extra hard. I started believing more and more and more. And when the opportunity came and I achieved the things that I did at ORU, and mind you, it was a long journey. Because going back through the 4-year process of eligibility, personally, even when I returned to OIU, because of some error with translating the school the entrance exams, or with translating the end of school term exams in the Bahamas, which we call our government national exams, and translating that to the American system at Oral Roberts, it was determined that due to some error that I was academically ineligible, and I had really good grades, so I couldn't understand how that would be the case. Anyway, what even made matters worse for me in wanting to leave OIU was that because of the academic ineligibility, I lost my scholarship for the first year, which meant that I had to pay my own school fee. And so now I'm like, this wasn't in the cards, because there's no way I was coming to a school that where I was going to have to pay. But my parents made it work. I stayed that year. And so now my fourth year of eligibility would kick in a year after my first year at OIU. So it also gave me an opportunity to complete a master's degree had I completed all of my schoolwork within the 4 years. And so I just started to look at the bright side of it. I started to be a bit more optimistic about the opportunities that were ahead of me. And so I just made it a point. I said, here's my goal. By the time as my 4-year scholarship ends, I need to have a master's degree and I need to be on my way to professional athletics. And the first year of eligibility, so the first year while being ineligible, I had to train on my own. I had to compete on my own. And that was a very rough and trying time for me, because you could imagine a 17-year-old kid now away from home, new environment, having to train on his own. There were times when I wanted to go to track meets, and you know, the nearest major track meets would be either at the University of Oklahoma or the University of Arkansas. And so I'm having to catch a Greyhound at 5 o'clock in the morning, 2 hours, 3 hour Greyhound ride. And by the time as I get off the bus, it's literally just enough time for me to walk into the arena, warm up, go race. And then I have to hop back on that Greyhound so that I can return to school.
Wow.
And I did that. I did that because I was determined that I wanted to succeed. And in doing that, in 2004, I became the first junior athlete from the Bahamas to actually make a senior team. I made the World Indoor Championship team and competed at World Indoors. And we were set to get a medal. And then there was some issue where one of my teammates got tripped up by one of the Russian teammates. And so they got disqualified for that. However, you know, my teammate, he tripped up and he was unable to complete the race. But that was a major accomplishment for a junior athlete to be able to compete on a senior team. And not just that, a junior athlete who spent the entire year training on his own by himself, having to make the sacrifices that I had to make. And so once I saw that, I knew that once I get into a real structured environment with a little bit more support, that I could achieve whatever my dreams are. And so fast forward now, starting to compete now in the NCAA system, your 4 years, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. The first year as a freshman, when they are qualified for the NCAA championships but didn't make the final cut. The next year, when they are qualified for the NCAA championships, competed but got knocked out in the first round. The third year, when they are qualified, competed, made it into the finals, became eighth in the finals. And for me, that was something to be celebrated even at OIU, because you're eighth in NCAA Division I. You're an All-American, right? And right. So, you know, that's that was a major accomplishment. However, for me, that wasn't enough. I knew that there was more in me. I knew that I could achieve more. And I remember that summer of 2007, I also graduated with my bachelor's degree that same year. And so now I have this extra year of eligibility, this extra year that OIU is going to pay for me to be in school to compete. And I said, I'll just go ahead and I'll get my master's. But I knew I needed to complete my master's while I have this final year, because I for certain knew that I wanted to go professional in track and field, and I was not prepared to have to pay for any additional semesters in college. So I just really zoned in and I focused on my schoolwork. I focused on track and I said, I need to complete this master's within this year. And so I went, and that summer gave right before returning to Tulsa, I competed with the national team, went to the Pan American Games, got a gold medal in the Pan American Games. And I went to the world famous straw market back in Nassau, and I got anything that had a Bahamian flag on it.
Yeah.
And when I returned to ORU, I got some armbands. And for me, this was going to be my inspiration, my motivation, my reminder of how important and how special this upcoming season would be. And right. So on the armbands, one had the Bahamian flag on it. The other had words written that said, something good is going to happen to you. And the other one said, expect a miracle. And so anytime I competed with these on. And I remember going throughout the season and everything was going great. My training times were phenomenal. And I told the coach, I said, you know what? Looking back at it now, we're in a position to do exactly what I said I wanted to do four and a half, five years ago. Even right. The things that I said could not be achieved yet at ORU. I said, even with losing my scholarship that first year, that gave me an opportunity to still have another year now to compete. I said, and so I'm going to make the best out of it. And Gabe, right. I remember going out. And I mean, went from, like I said, not qualifying, to qualifying, to competing, to not making the finals, to making the finals and coming eighth in the finals. And now I said, I am going to be NCAA champion. And I told the coach that year, I had ran at a meet like a month prior before the NCAA indoor championships, posted the fastest time in college that year, and got a hamstring injury that very same, actually quad injury that very same meet. And so now this is a bit devastating for any athlete. You're a month out from a major national meet, the biggest meet, and you got injured.
Wow. So a month out from NCAA championships and you get injured. How did you handle that?
I remember Coach Dahl just told me, he said, there's nothing else we can do besides get you healthy. So focus on the rehab, focus on the recovery. And we did that. We did that. And of course, I'm starting to doubt now because I'm thinking this is a lot of time away from the high intensity training. And I remember the night before, coach says, how does the leg feel? I says, I still can feel it, but I'm going out there tomorrow. I'm going to try my best to make it work. If I feel the injury, I'll stop because obviously this is an Olympic year again, 2008. I said, right. But I'll just give it my best. And Gabe, I went out there and I said, praying before I always do a race, I said, if I feel this injury, I will stop. However, I will try at least pushing out. I'll try my best at the start. And Gabe, I went and I remember the gun going off. The starting gun went off and I started. And I said, my first five steps, if I feel it, I'll stop. And one, two, three, four, five, I felt that injury. And something said, try again, keep going. And as I took more steps, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, and on, I started to feel that injury less and less and less. And it worked out that I ended up winning the meet. And of course, this now is history for Oral Roberts University because small school, never had an NCAA champion. And me being able to produce the first NCAA title. And it was like, wow. You know, coach and I look back at it and he says, 5 years ago, you came here and you said you wanted to leave because this is what you wanted to accomplish and you did not think that it was going to happen here. And look at this. Look at, right. at the fact that we were able to create history. And so, the lesson learned for me also in that was so often we're very close to our dreams and we give up. We set those limits on us, whether it be physical limitations, whether it be mental or emotional limitations. And when I think about it, I had given myself that limit of five hard steps and stop. And through five steps, I did feel that injury. But had I not pushed beyond my limitations, had I not pushed beyond my comfort zone, I would have never experienced the feeling or the success of that NCAA title had I not pushed for six, seven, eight, nine, and 10 steps. And so my message to kids or to persons just in general is, yes, there may be some quite realistic limitations that we're facing, but we have to find a way to push beyond those. And so that was the indoors. Now, Gabe, we go into outdoors. This is where I'm thinking, okay, you know what? I'm the NCAA indoor champion. It is my goal now to go there and be the NCAA outdoor champion. And of course, now I started to get a lot more recognition now. I remember getting a call from ESPN, the late Jenny Nichols, their producer. And she says, hey, I saw your interview where you talked about your name and how you're named after Mario Andretti. And Mario Andretti is a great friend of ours here on ESPN because we produced the IndyCar series. And I'd like to put you guys in contact. Long story short, Mario Andretti and I, we got in contact. And that was another dream come true for me because my parents actually named me after Mario Andretti.
Oh, wow.
And so I was able to fly down to Indianapolis 500 and spend some time with him, meet him face to face and all that. So that was exciting, right? And so for the outdoor season now, Gabe, I'm out there and I'm running with so much more confidence because I know what I was able to accomplish just a few months prior. And then I came up against someone who I just could not figure out how to beat. I'm talking about no matter how I strategize my races, this guy just kept beating me. And he was from one of the major schools, one of the top schools. So, of course, it was in the sport of track and field. It was in their best interest to keep promoting this guy. And I remember a buddy of mine, the same, believe it or not, the same head coach from high school, he came over to Tulsa during my graduate year and he got a graduate assistant job. And because it was so difficult for me trying to balance my master's degree in business administration along with this high level training and competition schedule. And Gabe, no matter how much I tried and this guy kept beating me from Baylor, my buddy says, you know what? He says, for the rest of the season, I'm not calling you Andretti. I'm calling you two-time NCAA champion. And so when I started to have that internal doubt, I had someone right there speaking life and positivity into me. And he started to say, you're the NCAA champion, you're the NCAA champion. And I remembered we went to NCS Now Outdoors. And I had just taken two consecutive losses to this kid out from Baylor, the Gerald Bettis. And went through the first round and I felt great. Went through the semifinals, I felt pretty good. However, Legerald and I had to race each other in the semis. And this is less than 24 hours from the final. And he beat me. And he beat me with me running a personal record. And so that was a bit discouraging because I felt like he just beat me at my best. How do I come back and beat him in less than 24 hours? And I remembered my head coach at the time, Coach Dal, came and he says, you know what? I watched the races. He says, I think you're being a bit too conservative at the start of the race. He says, I need you to go out and run that first part of the race as if you're running an actual 200 meter race. Now, for anybody in track and field, Gabe, especially 400 meters, it is all about energy distribution. So the strategy that my coach was giving me, no one would probably follow that strategy. However, we felt like if we wanted to win that NCAA outdoor title, we had to leave it all on the line. And so right. I told my buddy who kept the one Brunel who kept speaking life into me, I told him what the strategy was. And he says, okay, if that's what it takes, then that's what you have to do. But you are going to be the NCAA champion again tomorrow. And I told some of my other friends the strategy and they were like, oh, no, Treddy, you may go there gambling and all trying to win and you may end up not probably even finishing. Like, that's suicidal. Try not to do that. And Gabe, I just felt strongly within myself that I was prepared to put it all on the line because I believed that I could have been two-time NCAA champion. And I remembered when that gun went off and we started running. I started. And then there was this tendency to get into a relaxed phase. And as I'm starting to relax, I remembered something said to me, Lord, if I do my part and I go all out this first part of the race, I'm trusting on you to finish. And I just picked up Gabe and I just started running and running and running. And next thing you know, I came onto the home straightaway in front. And I remember my coach telling me, if you come off in front, you are strong enough to hold on. Here's how he said, you are strong enough to hold on. A few weeks prior, we started to pull sleds and pull sleds for 150 meters, much longer than most athletes would pull sleds. Most would pull 30 to 50 meters. And he says, I'm having you do this because the race is going to be so tight at the end that you need to be confident within yourself that you're strong enough to finish. And Gabe, when I came on to that home straight away and I started running, and of course, fatigue starting to settle in, I just started to think about all the work that I did in preparation for that. And of course, I'm starting to hear this guy come up on the side of me, come up on the side of me. And I could hear the announcers calling others' names rather than my name. And getting there to the finish line. And at this point, it feels like the finish line is taking forever to come. And I just remembered coming to that line and I just kept, I leaned for the tape. And when I looked, I said, okay, I'm not sure if I won. And it took a minute for the automatic results to show up. And when it showed up that I did win. And I won because when I leaned for the tape, I leaned with my head down. And the guy on the outside of me, he leaned looking at me.
And right. So that was Lionel, right, at USC. So he almost caught you. I mean, if you go back and watch it, which I did, you almost get caught there at the end.
Yes.
But you mentioned something to me, which was really cool. And it was a lesson that you took away from that. So I'd love for you to share that about the ending there and kind of how you use that now in your life.
Yes. So for me, you know, in life, there are so many distractions, so many things are going on all around us, be it positive, be it negative. And for me, the lesson learned from that race was no matter what's happening around us, we always need to stay focused on our lane. And so when I dipped for the line, I dipped with my head down, focusing on my lane and my number. When the guy next to me dipped, he dipped looking at me. And the difference between me winning or losing may have been in that very same lane. Had I leaned looking at him, I may have been an inch shorter or inch further away from that line, which ultimately may have resulted in him winning. And so my advice to anyone is no matter what's happening, you just have to stay focused on your lane. And so at the end of that whole process now, I'm like, wow, like I achieved the dreams and the goals that I set out in terms of wanting to be an NCAA champion. I did, you know, making history, doing the impossible at Oral Roberts University. And I remember the coaches from South Carolina and Nebraska, you know, after I would have seen them, they would have said, you know what? I remember you being that young kid coming out of high school begging for the opportunity to come to our schools. And you are one of the greatest mistakes that we would have made. Like, we should have believed in you. We should have, you know, but I'm sure I get kids probably coming all the time saying stuff like that. So one of the things that I've learned, Gabe, is I tell people all the time, it's not up to anybody to believe in you. You have to believe in yourself. And once you believe in yourself, then it's up for you to show people why they should have believed in you. And so I wasn't upset at those coaches. I just realized that in life, I had to make it happen. I had to show people what I believed. And thankfully, I had a team around me who encouraged me, my coaches, my friends, and, you know, who bought into the dreams and the goals that I had. And they supported me wholeheartedly with that. And so throughout that process, I was able to go on to the Olympics.
Well, Andretti, I just for one second there, because you hit on a really great thing there that I'd love to talk about. And this is really, it's something that you told me in person. And it was actually two things that got me really interested. Number one, you said you said when you first got to ORU, you thought, I can't win here. Like, there's no way I'm going to do this here. You saw the facilities, you said, no chance. But then you later said, upon reflection of your whole career, there's nowhere else that you could have gone and had the success that you had. And I thought, wow, like I was really fascinated by the dichotomy of those two statements. You have a kid from the Bahamas now in Oklahoma, excited to begin his career, thinking, how the heck am I going to do this? And then all of a sudden, 4 years later, you're saying, yeah, you know what? If I went somewhere else, this probably would have never happened.
Yes, I agree. You know, and I believe that it was destined for me to be at ORU. And through all the ups and through all the downs, and no matter how much I even in the onset initially fought to leave ORU, I am very thankful that I didn't. Because I honestly can't say that I would have been as successful had I gone anywhere else. And even if I did become as successful, even if I did achieve the things that I did, the level of appreciation that not only I have for ORU, but that also ORU has for me, I think it would not have, it far exceeds any other school, because when you have NCAA champions coming out multiple years back to back, you know, it becomes the thing, it becomes the norm. And I think
it's an expectation.
Yes, the expectation. But I think I was able to be an inspiration to all Roberts University and to the student athletes there in terms of letting them see, like, hey, you can do it here. All it takes is you truly believing in you. And once you believe in you, then you will facilitate you going after your dreams. And even in my role now here at ORU as consultant and assistant coach, like, that is my message to the student athletes. Let's make it happen. Why not here?
Yeah, I love what you said about not becoming a product of your environment. I thought that was a really good point that you brought up. And obviously 2008 was a huge year for you. I mean, like you said, indoor champion, outdoor champion. And then if we fast forward a few months, qualifying for the Olympics and winning a silver medal, which I believe you have with you in the office there right now.
Yes.
You want to show it off there? So, you know, the men's 4x400 relay.
Yes.
The Team Bahamas earning the silver medal in Beijing. Can you describe the feeling of the opening ceremonies and being there?
Man. Gabe, that was the most exciting atmosphere ever. Had an opportunity to meet Michael Phelps, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. I'm talking about all the stars for all the other sports. And everyone's there just enjoying the moment and being fascinated by or with each other, because basically the Olympics, that's the world's best, right? And so the opening ceremonies, I just remember sitting there and I was like, wow. Like, when persons ask, how was that feeling at the Olympics? As cliche as it sounds, my answer is, it was a dream come true. And so it was a wonderful experience. I wish every athlete would have an opportunity to experience something like that, because it truly epitomizes what it means to be amongst the world's best.
And take us to that race where you won silver, and I believe you started off the first leg. And I'm curious about what's going through your head the moments before the race. Like, what are you telling yourself moments before? I think the camera pans to you, maybe throw a couple punches, like, okay, I'm ready to rock. But what's going through your head as you're getting ready to prepare for this race?
So, of course, there's the nerves and the excitement of being here in the moment. And you know that the Olympics is every 4 years, so you definitely don't want to ruin this moment. You know that you are representing an entire nation, an entire country. You have the flag on your chest. And so you think about making the country proud, but also not wanting to disappoint. And then you look around, and in that stadium at the time, it was 110, I think, 1,000 persons. And now you think about the millions of persons watching on television around the world, and it's like, wow, like, all eyes truly feels as if it's on you. And so there's that nerves. However, thankfully, going through the NCAA collegiate system that year, I was able to build up the resilience and the fortitude and the strength to be able to handle competing in these high pressure situations. And so I felt prepared enough, but there was still that feeling of, I cannot mess this up. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity, and I need to seize the moment. And so I started to really just focusing on all the positive aspects of it, the things that would lead to success as compared to anything that would probably take me out of my game or discourage me from actually feeling confident enough to go there and give it my all.
Quick question for you. As someone who is participating, as an athlete that was participating there, and I don't recall what the schedule was exactly, but were you able to go watch other sports compete at all?
I was able to go and watch other sports. I watched some swimming. I watched some basketball. But usually you have to try to find that line between being a fan and being a competitor, especially being a competitor who has medal aspirations. So because of that, you don't want to socialize too much because you still need to ensure that you're staying focused, you're getting your rest and all that. So on a few occasions, I did have an opportunity to watch a few events, but the way that track and field sets up is you close out the Olympics. So being the last to compete, you really have to try to conserve as much energy as possible. And so I didn't get to do as much as I wanted to do. And it was all for a part of the sacrifice of just remaining focused for my event and trying to win a medal.
Take us through that feeling of being on the podium and having someone reach up and kind of bowing down a little bit and having someone put that medal on. What is that feeling?
Hey, like? Dave, listen, I'll never forget. It's just like this. So they come to you, they shake your hand. You're standing there, you're excited. And then you lean over just like that. They rest that on. And what everybody does, right? You go and you have to kiss it or you have to bite it. You have to make sure it's real, right? it was a great feeling, man. And you're just looking around and everyone from every country just applauding you because they know the work that it takes to be able to achieve that level of success and to win an Olympic gold medal. And so, to win an Olympic medal. And so definitely, man, I still have that. I still can remember that feeling like it was yesterday, Gabe.
That's awesome. And I know earlier you mentioned that you were born to run. Like, this is what I do. And metaphorically speaking, you continue to run your race and you've stayed in track and field. You've stayed in performance. And after your competitive career, you transition into coaching. As you mentioned, you're there at Oral Roberts now, assisting with coaching. You're doing some work in the Bahamas coaching. So was there a specific moment or experience that sparked this interest for you? It sounds like you had a lot of great mentors along the way. Is this something that you always thought you might do? Or was there something specific where you said, okay, it's time for me to go coach?
Well, I'll tell you, I always thought that I'd run track and field for the rest of my life at a high level, right? Because that's the only thing I saw myself wanting to do. And in 2007, I tore my Achilles and it's been an uphill battle trying to get back from that. I do intend to get back competing internationally, whether it be at the Olympic level or at the Masters level. I'm turning 39 this year. And so, but I enjoy track and field. I enjoy that feeling. I enjoy that expression of running. And so for me, I realized more and more that I have such a wealth of knowledge and experience to be able to pass on to future generations, learning from the mistakes that I would have made and learning from the things that I would have done correctly. And then, like you said, just having so many great and positive role models and mentors in my life and realizing the impact that it had on me or that it has on me, you know, I want to be in a position to where I could do the same. And so I just found myself, I can't tell you there was a path to wanting to be a coach because that wasn't the plan. But eventually, I think it just may have started with someone coming, an athlete coming up and asking for advice. And before you know it, I can't turn them down. And I'm putting more and more time and effort into that. And then more and more persons coming and more opportunities coming about. And then I realized that I really can impact the world in a positive way, not just through me competing and my athletic abilities, but then also through my ability to coach and not just coach from a physical standpoint, but to be able to coach from a mental and emotional standpoint, which I think is extremely important. Being able to encourage kids to dream big, work hard, have faith, believe in themselves, believe in their dreams, and being able to follow their goals and their dreams so that they could be able to fulfill the purpose and the passion that's for their lives, you know? And so I am happy, I am blessed to be in the position that I am in. I am happy and I am blessed to be in the position that I'm in with Oral Roberts University, with Champion Spirit Country Club back in the Bahamas. And it is my goal to produce future Olympians.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you mentioning that and talking about your approach and the things that have carried you to this point and how you're able to help instill that into the younger generations. And I go back to something you said where your friend before the race for outdoors told you you're a two-time NCAA champion, you're a two-time NCAA champion, and speaking this into existence. So you find yourself oftentimes helping younger youth athletes that have big aspirations to speak their goals into existence.
Yes. No, definitely. You know, my life's motto is dream big, work out of faith. Everything starts with a dream. I think it's through following our dreams and our goals that we actually discover the purpose for our lives. But then outside of that dream or outside of those goals, now we have to work towards that. And oftentimes that's where a lot of persons go wrong. They're not prepared to put in the work. They're not prepared to go above and beyond to ensure that they are achieving those dreams and those goals. And then at the end of it, you have to have belief that it can actually happen. Like if you don't believe in yourself, if you don't believe that things can be done, then you're honestly just wasting your time. And so for me, it's just about following. The motto is the blueprint. Just dreaming big, working hard, and having faith.
So just to recap there, dream big, work hard, have faith. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. So a question for you as you kind of reflect on all of this. What legacy do you hope to leave behind, both as an athlete, as a mentor, coach, and person?
That's the first time I think I've been asked that question or in that way. And for me, I think I just want people, when they hear the name Andretti Bain, I think I want people to think of one who believed wholeheartedly in himself, believed wholeheartedly in his dreams and his goals, but also worked towards those dreams and those goals in order to be an inspiration to others. One of the greatest joys that I receive from track and field is not the medals, which is great, but one of the greatest joys is being able to hear somebody tell me, hey, because of you, I'm actually going after my dreams and my goals. I've achieved my dreams and my goals. Being able to see smiles come on person's faces, being able to see my family, my friends, my loved ones, get a sense of joy and pride when they see me competing or when they see me being successful. And then just being able to encourage others just to go in after their dreams, fulfilling their purpose in life. So for me, the legacy is just one who wholeheartedly believed in following their dreams, following their goals in order to fulfill the purpose in life. I believe that we all have a purpose. And for me, I feel as if track and field has led me to discovering that purpose that God has for me. And so my legacy is just being able to inspire the world to doing the same, dreaming big, working hard, having faith.
See, this is why I introduce you as the great Andretti Bain.
I accept and I appreciate that. Thank you, Gabe.
Well, I have to say, if the name Andretti wasn't already associated with the word fast, then it surely is now between you and Mario Andretti. Absolutely. Andretti now is just another term for fast.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So a couple of quicker questions to finish up here. Number one, I have to ask you about your experience with that Kaiser leg press, because we talked about your training and your training over the course of your career. And then, you know, you got about a minute and 20 seconds or so on that leg press and you were taken aback. Tell us about that experience.
And listen, thanks again, Gabe, to you and Mike and the whole Kaiser team for coming down there to Champion Spirit Country Club in Nassau. I think that's an amazing facility that we have down there. I think we are truly going to produce champions, world-class champions, training right there out of that facility, led by Abdullah Fandiga. It's going to be great. And listen, that Kaiser leg press, I underestimated that. And of course, I'm thinking, there's no way that I could go on a machine and it's going to make me feel as if I am actually running a 400 meter race. And listen, when Mike turned that up, oh man, I love that so much, Gabe. And it is a testament to you guys at Kaiser and the Kaiser brand and the types of equipment that you guys are producing that are leading to sports performance or innovating sports performance. And so definitely looking forward to, not just for myself, using more of the Kaiser equipment, but also introducing a lot more athletes to the Kaiser equipment.
All right, so on that note, your favorite piece of Kaiser equipment, is it the leg press?
It's definitely the leg press. Definitely the leg press. As a matter of fact, whenever you have Mike return, I intend, Mike put me through his leg press workout.
I
bring one for you guys.
I think I have to go to the bathroom during that. All right, couple of quick questions here to finish off. Some fun ones, a rapid fire of sorts. Best dish or favorite food in the Bahamas?
Guava duck. It's a breaded pastry that has the guava fruit. It has it boiled into it. Now, some persons bake it. I prefer the dough being boiled. That's how my mom made it when I was a kid. And it's my all-time favorite, guava duff.
Guava duff. Wow.
And that's
you held out on me.
A nice guava sauce as well.
That sounds pretty good. So when you were in Oklahoma, okay, I'm talking freshman year, like September, you know, you're no longer around your family. That's what you were craving?
That's what I was craving. And anytime that I went home, I got a nice supply of it to bring back to Tulsa.
Man. Okay. So on the flip side, when you would leave Tulsa and go back to the Bahamas, there's got to be something that was back in Tulsa that you were craving.
Chinese food, American Chinese food. And I'll tell you, it's quite different from the authentic Chinese food in China, right? And I went to Beijing and I said, you know what? I love Chinese food so much. Let me go ahead and let me be in China, go to a Chinese restaurant, eat Chinese food. And it was totally different. I couldn't do it. And so I'll stick with the American version of the Chinese food.
I can imagine that post silver medal meal was quite hefty there.
Yes.
Your favorite activities to do outside of training, outside of running track in the Bahamas? What do you enjoy doing?
I enjoy shooting pool. I don't get to do it as often as I'd like. I enjoy bowling. I don't get to do it as often as I like. Card games. I enjoy playing dominoes with my friends. I enjoy playing spades, another card game. Mm-hmm. And if I can do those in my free time, then I'm a happy, happy guy.
Next time you're in Chicago, we'll go out, get some American Chinese food, and we'll go bowling. How about that?
I appreciate that. I'm going to keep you to that game. Thank you.
Keep me to it. Absolutely. Favorite sport outside of track and field to watch?
I love watching basketball and American football. I honestly enjoy it.
All right. And then the individual 400 meter Olympic champion this summer will be from which country?
Steven Gardner from the Bahamas.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. We have it recorded. We have it recorded. I'm going to hold you to that one.
And Shawnee Miller-Weibo from the Bahamas. I think the Bahamas were going to win the men and the women's 400 meters.
1-1.
1-1, men and women.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens, and we'll make sure that we cut this and play it back when it happens.
Yes, and mix relay. We're going to clean it up, Gabe.
Everything.
Everything. Goal. It's a goal rush in the Bahamas this Olympics in the 400 and 4x4 relays.
Anything 400 is a goal for the Bahamas.
Yes, we are the quarter mile capital of the world.
That's going to be the title for the episode, I think.
Yes.
All right, amazing. Andretti, thank you so much for joining me today on the Kaiser Human Performance Podcast. Appreciate you, you know, not just for today, but for being an amazing host down the Bahamas for us. We're glad that you're a part of the field of human performance and wish you nothing but continued health and success on your journey. We'll make sure that we drop your Instagram handle in the episode notes below. Make sure if you're listening that you check that out and give Andretti a follow to stay up to date on him.
Gabe, I appreciate you so much, not just for the professional network that we have been able to develop, but also for the friendship that we're developing. I'm very proud of you. I appreciate the time that I had spent with you down in the Bahamas, the whole Kaiser team. And definitely looking forward to us working and collaborating a lot more in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Gabe.
We appreciate you tuning in to this episode of the Kaiser Human Performance Podcast. To stay up to date on all things Kaiser, follow us at Kaiser Fitness on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. For more content, you can visit our Kaiser Fitness YouTube page and at our website, www.kaiser.com. Thank you, and have a great day.